And this is the final hour. We'll take your phone calls with Stanton Friedman. Those of you in the military or you have some stories you may want to share with us, feel free to check in with us, too. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stan, what's your reaction to the big push by the Disclosure Project folks to try to petition the United Nations for open and free hearings?
Well, you know, I wish I could say, yeah, sign the petition. I'm not going to sign it myself because their push is for the UN to hold hearings secrecy-free, everybody protected, get everything out in the open. And they claim that this will solve the world's energy problems and propulsion problems and all this sort of stuff. And there are a couple of problems. One, I have never seen any indication that the United Nations has any authority whatsoever to get anybody working on classified stuff about UFOs in any country to say anything. You know, the United Nations I have to say, the United Nations doesn't run the show. Now, I gave testimony at hearings 1978, I guess, that the General Assembly had. They were well received. A bunch of people were there, scientists, J. Allen Hynek, et cetera, and myself. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The United States, all they were pushing for was to collect, have the United Nations, make sense, serve as a central collection agency for reports from all over the world. And the General Assembly seemed interested in doing that. They passed the motion, but the U.S. put the kibosh on that. And I expect they're still going to be putting a kibosh on it. And so I think it would be better to try to get, let's say, amnesty for the kind of military people who've been calling in today, even if it's just to talk about things that happened 50 or more years ago, you know, because the Air Force keeps saying UFOs aren't a threat to the security of the United States. So let people talk about it. And so I am not, I didn't sign a petition that a guy named Kent Jeffrey put out about Roswell because he switched from wanting to find out about Roswell to the government should put everything they know out on the table. I, for one, do not believe that technology stuff should be put out on the table. Remember, the rule is you can't tell your friends without telling your enemies. Shall we really put new high tech out on the table where the Osama bin Ladens can get at it? I don't think so. And so I think it's counterproductive. It draws a lot of attention. And there may be thousands of people who sign any petition. You know, you can always get a rent-a-petition signer, so to speak. But it's not where I'm putting my effort and I am. As a matter of fact, I've just written a column for the MUFON Journal and for UFO Magazine in which I talk about that very subject. And so, you know, I know some people get upset at me. You don't think the public's entitled to know everything? No, I don't. Suppose, for example, George, that we've figured out a new method for detecting craft flying saucers in the atmosphere. Should we share that so other people, if they attack us, we'll be able to clobber our stuff coming toward them?
Nope.
Because we've given them the tools to do that? In other words, security does have a legitimate role in today's world, like it or not.
Good point. To the phones we go again. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Tim in Phoenix.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for holding.
Thanks for taking the call. If I could quickly get in two things. The first thing I wanted to bring up was I think you had the fella who put out the Out of the Blue DVD, and I saw a program by the same name several years on the Sci-Fi Channel. I don't know if that was an earlier edition of that, but at the beginning of that documentary, they show quick clips, video clips of footage, and I saw the most incredible thing that lasted about 3 seconds, and I never heard anything about it. I'm a UFO buff, so I know, you know, I would have heard any additional information, but this is a daylight video of an object, a bright glowing disc flying over the white sands dunes in White Sand, New Mexico. It dips below dips below two dunes, comes up, and then goes behind another dune, and you see a big explosion of what looks like glowing magnesium. Have you guys seen that?
I have. Stan, how about you?
And it's in my gray basket. I don't know how legitimate the footage is. I do like, that's one of the better documentaries Jim Fox is the guy you're talking about.
Right.
And he, of course, recently talked to Fife Symington and has filmed him. He's updating the film.
He's been on the show.
This is different from the movie that I mentioned, Best Evidence, which will be on in Canada on the Space Channel on May 10th. That isn't one of the cases that will be on there, but it's a potpourri of good stuff, a mixture of stuff. And,
the thing I'm dying to know is who took that footage and did they run over across the hill and check it out?
Jim Fox is in the, you know, go to the internet and look up Out of the Blue, and I'm sure you can locate James Fox in the San Francisco area.
Okay. One last thing I wanted to ask you. I was reading Situation Red by Stringfield, Len Stringfield.
Yes.
Back in the late 70s.
Yes.
And I didn't know whether this statement about Barry Goldwater was correct. I wrote Barry Goldwater because I'm a constituent. He wrote back, and he flat out said, "I truly doubt that the U.S. Air Force has any information on UFOs that I wouldn't have access to." And he just, let me clear up my position, you know, that 10% of all sightings can't be explained, you know, yada, da, da, da. He didn't even address any of the things. So I wrote him again. He writes back, and he says, "Everything that in the enclosure is true. Let me clear up my position. I've never seen a UFO, but I have intelligent friends who have." Have you ever gotten any researchers who've received letters where he flatly states that the Air Force has no information that...
Well, no, not that they have no information. I've talked to people who knew Goldwater. I've seen copies of letters that he sent. There's no question he was interested. You know, he was an Air Force Brigadier General in the Reserve. He flew all kinds of planes.
Mm-hmm.
And the story, he certainly has repeated the story of his trying to get Curtis LeMay to give him access to the Blue Room at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and how they knew each other. I mean, this wasn't a cold call, so to speak.
Right.
And LeMay told him, hell no, you don't have a need to know and don't ask again. So, yeah, the story is consistent. As a matter of fact, we use some of that in my movie, UFOs Are Real, dating back to 79.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was careful in what he said. He didn't say he's seen wreckage. He didn't say he'd seen a saucer. He knows people who have that he trusts, and he was denied access, so therefore he cannot say what was in that facility because he didn't get inside.
Mm-hmm.
He was careful in what he said, but I know somebody who was with him in the Arizona legislature a long time ago, and there's no question that Barry was interested, was convinced something was going on, but he didn't have access, and mm-hmm. that's the way it is.
Yeah. I was just kind of taken back because he flat out said, "I truly doubt that the U.S. Air Force has any information on UFOs that I wouldn't have access to."
Well, he changed his mind about that.
You don't think it was a lie?
What?
You don't think it was a lie?
I think that statement was a lie, but I think it may have been written before he'd gone through this stuff, and he may have felt he was protecting security, and it may have been written by a staffer.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because it was after I read Stanfield's remarks in the book, I mean, that I got that first reply back.
Well, people put out all kinds of stuff from offices of senators and stuff. No, there's no question of Barry's interest, concern, a recognition that he was being denied access,
mm-hmm.
but he understood security. And that's the thing, that people who do understand security recognize that they may indeed not have a need to know. It's not enough to have a clearance. You need a need to know.
Hey, tell us the incredible story. I've done it a little bit, but it's better from you, Stanton, of the Jackie Gleason, Richard Nixon story.
Well, you know, that is an extraordinary story. They knew each other. Nixon had a summer, a winter home, I guess you'd say, in Florida. Gleason lived down in the Miami area. And the story goes that Nixon asked Jackie if he would be interested in seeing something, you know, very unusual. Supposedly took him to Homestead Air Force Base, showed him an alien body, and you know, that greatly affected Gleason, who I will say I am absolutely certain was very interested in UFOs. Merv Griffin told me that, as a matter of fact. It was well known. The problem comes that appeared in the Inquirer, and I talked, the source of the story is supposedly Jackie's wife. I don't know what number it was, but it wasn't his current wife. Anyway, I found the lawyer who handled the Gleason estate, and he checked with the wife and said the story wasn't true. So, on the other hand, you have to say, we know that there were plans afoot to release some information. The movie UFOs Past, Present, and Future, there's a book by that title by Robert Emmenegger. They even put together a movie, and he told me, Emmenegger did, that the Republicans had come to him. He'd done some political movie making for them, and he was supposed to put together a show using only government people. And they were supposedly going to be shown footage of a saucer landing at Holloman Air Force Base and so forth. Well, this was pre-Watergate, and once Watergate happened, obviously putting out a story like this with Nixon under fire and he resigned was not a politic thing to do. So they were not denied use of this footage that Emmenegger assured me he had seen for their movie. So the timing is right here. So I put that whole story in my gray basket. There are elements that are definitely true. That is, that Nixon and Gleason knew each other, that Gleason was very interested in flying saucer, and there apparently were plans in Nixon's second term. He wasn't running for reelection, of course, because of the law, to release information. But that all went down the tubes, I guess, with Watergate. And you know, what can I say? I can't pull out the footage. I've talked to somebody else who claims they saw it, though.
All right, back to the phones we go. Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Greetings and good morning from Alaska, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Oh.
Hey, journalist and whatnot, Mark, but I go by a call sign of Agent X. Stan, you and I were on Larry King together at different times and a couple other shows and enjoying the show. And George, thanks for doing it tonight. I got a couple questions for Stan.
Okay.
You know, I've been up here about 25 years now and still do a fair amount of work with the military. And there was it seems to be perhaps the first really codified pursuit and identification and photograph project that took place up here in the late 40s and early 50s to chase down UFOs and take pictures of them. And do you know the name of that program, Stanton?
Oh, dear. I do know what you're talking about because I looked it up. Wendell Stevens told me something about that.
Yeah, they were using like RB-29s and WB-29s and B-50s.
Yeah, there were. Look, it wasn't only in Alaska. There was a concentrated effort made all over the world to get as much data as possible. I mean, let's face it, Operation Main Brace, the largest NATO exercise with lots of ships. This was in the Baltic Sea area
in
1952, and there were many sightings around that, and the government was very concerned. They were concerned about the sightings just around the time of the first, in 52, H-bomb explosion. So wherever there were military people and interceptors, and that's a lot of the world, and remember, there were a lot of interceptors in Alaska because it was thought the Russians would attack us over the top, and the Alaskan Air Command was right there.
Yeah, and we were playing games.
Lots of good cases up there, and I wish I could remember because I ran across a reference to that at Maxwell Air Force Base where the Project Blue Book files were for a number of years ago. Not in the Blue Book files, but in an index outside of their documents, and I looked up UFOs, and here was all kinds of stuff that wasn't in the Blue Book files. And I was going to say Pandora, but I don't think that's right.
What I'll do is I'll drop you an email, and because you could find that code name, I could do some more searching up here in the historical archives that exist at Elmendorf.
Okay.
The other event happened up in the Brooks Range back in 94-95 time frame of something that went down at Lake Chandler, which is way north the far north mountain range that goes west to east across the very top of Alaska. And something went in up there, involved getting the Air Force pararescue guys together, and evidently the maps and charts of that point weren't very good, so they went out and got an old bush rat guy that I know through another person who has been out there for years and years, and they took him out there, and he was able to direct them to the area. And of course, they blindfolded him while they recovered stuff that that they picked off the top of a mountain out there by Lake Chandler. Then it was brought in, and everything was sterilized, and from then on, they don't remember the mission. I was wondering if you had ever heard anything about that.
No, I haven't. There is a great case up there, the Japan Airlines case, which is
a great case, yes.
And so, I'd like to hear more about that. My email address is FS for flying saucer, PHYS for physicist. I know it's corny, but what the heck, at Rogers, Rogers.com. And for those who want to write me, Post Office Box 958, Houlton, Houlton, Maine, ME, 04730-0958. It's a place you can order stuff by mail if you don't want to use PayPal on my website. But I'd sure like to hear more stories like the ones you just mentioned. Because I'm sure there is good stuff out there, and it's time it saw the light of day.
By the way, you mentioned Richard Nixon, of course, and I just wanted to let everyone know that on Ian Punnett's show this Saturday, Coast to Coast Live with Ian Punnett, he's going to have St. John Hunt on, and he is the eldest son of super spy E. Howard Hunt, who went to jail for 33 months in the Watergate episode. But what's great about this is we have audio. Not a lot of people have heard this, but we have audio that we're going to play on Ian's program, and we're going to play on Coast to Coast Tuesday night, the first hour, this coming Tuesday, of E. Howard Hunt talking about how he believes LBJ was involved in JFK's assassination. Now, this is an accusation made by a fellow who's now dead, who was convicted in the Watergate situation, but he talks a little bit about this whole episode. And so make sure everyone is listening to Ian Punnett. And we're going to have St. John Hunt back on Tuesday, the first hour. It will be a fascinating program. Do you still have your radio special going, my friend, for everyone who's listening?
Yes, I do. I used to call it the George Special. Now it's just the radio special. Both my books, Crash at Corona, and the second edition of Top Secret Magic, that's just 2005 with a whole new 5,000-word afterword, and my CD-ROM, UFOs, The Real Story, for $35, that includes shipping and handling. It's a real bargain from that Post Office Box 958, Houlton, Maine, 04730-0958. And I know the price is going to go up because postage rates are going up next month.
That's right. They are. Stay with us. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls with Stanton Friedman on Coast to Coast AM. What a fascinating show. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, get ready for it. It's Friday into Saturday, those special open lines. And, of course, we always come up with something innovative for a hotline. So that's on our next Coast to Coast program. But when we come back again, your special calls with Stanton Friedman, the father of modern-day ufology. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And, Stan, before we go to final calls, the Mary Fish map that she put together
Marjorie
on Biddy.
Fish.
Marjorie. Yes, sorry.
She did an incredible amount of work. Betty Hill on board a saucer, apparently as it came out under hypnosis, was shown this, I'll call it a 3D map because I don't know what else to call it, sort of like a hologram. And she had asked the leader of the crew that abducted them where he was from, and in the understatement of the decade, she says, "I know you're not from around here." And he shows her this map, this model with lines, a couple of circles close together. The circles represented stars, and there were heavy lines between a pair of circles, and there were curved lines out. There were heavy trade routes, light trade routes, occasional expeditions. And she asks, where are you on the map? And he says, well, do you know where you are? And she says, I don't know anything about astronomy. And Wise Guy Alien says, how can I tell you where I'm from if you don't know where you're at? End of discussion. Now, Dr. Simon, who we discussed earlier, had the good sense, you know, he's puzzled by this crazy story, to ask her if she can remember what the map looks like. And she said yes. So he gives her a post-hypnotic suggestion to draw it, if and only if she can remember it accurately. She draws it. It's in the book, The Interrupted Journey. And we talk about this in great detail in Captured, the new book by Kathleen Martin and myself, which will be out in early August.
Okay.
But briefly, she built 26 different three-dimensional models of our local galactic neighborhood. And after an enormous amount of very careful work, she was able to identify all the stars in this pattern that you see. And they're all sun-like stars. And the pattern makes sense on a from A to B to C to D kind of basis. And that's where the base stars Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 reticuli come from. And I published the first article in Saga magazine way back in the early 70s and convinced the editor of Astronomy magazine at that time, Terence Dickinson, to talk to Marjorie. He did an article, got more response than anything they'd ever published before or since. Published about 11 letters over the next year, put out a 32-page full-color booklet with the pros and the cons, including a couple letters from Carl Sagan, sold 10,000 copies, which is unheard of for this kind of business.
Right.
And then Carl's lawyer threatened to sue them if because his name was on the front where it belonged with all the other letter authors. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse, and I wound up with 18,000 copies of this Zeta Reticuli incident booklet. That was in the early 70s. I'm almost out now, just about out. But her work has stood the test of time. Everybody who attacked her work naturally misrepresented what she did and how she did it. And it's amazing because her most difficult problem was that we didn't have good distance data back then. It's hard to measure distance to the stars, and the astronomers weren't going anywhere, so what difference did it make anyway? You need two numbers to be able to aim a telescope, and that's all you need. Who cares how far? Well, the Hipparcos satellite, a European Space Agency satellite, made millions of measurements of distances very much more accurately, and it really stood the test of time. And Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 reticuli, we now know, are only an eighth of a light year apart. And it's very exciting work, and it's discussed in the book, and including the attacks on the star map. And so it's amazing that work. Marjorie was a very bright gal. She was teaching third grade at the time, and then she went to work at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And it's amazing that an amateur, she belonged to Mensa, she's a very bright gal, and she did very careful work. And I mentioned my movie, UFOs Are Real. Dr. George Mitchell, the astronomer at Ohio State University, actually used one of her models as a teaching tool in class because she did such a fine job. You don't normally get a chance to see how things look from a 3D viewpoint. To see if you find a 3D pattern to match a 2D drawing is not easy. Excellent piece of work. And it's one of the reasons I was glad to contribute to Captured, was because her work should reach a wider audience. It was briefly talked about in the television movie, The UFO Incident, with James Earl Jones back in the early 70s. But hopefully this will get her more recognition.
How would Betty... Let's assume whatever happened to her was not the abduction, but something else. Is there any other way, Stanton, she could have conceived, thought of, the Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 area?
No, because nobody at that time had the right distance data on three of the stars in the map, and Betty didn't know anything. She's a social worker, after all, didn't know anything about astronomy. Nobody doing what Marjorie did back when this event happened in 61 or the book came out in 66 could have correctly identified the stars because the distance data wasn't good enough. So that's one of the exciting things about this. Also, it turns out that all the pattern stars are in a plane, like slices of pepperoni on a thin pizza, you know, instead of like raisins in a big fat loaf of raisin bread. And being in a plane, the planets in our solar system are pretty much in a plane. It makes travel between them very much easier. And nobody had done what Marjorie did before any of this happened. And we didn't know this. And certainly the identity, the pointing out that Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli are the closest to each other pair of sun-like stars in the neighborhood, that doesn't show up anywhere. Nobody knew that.
That's amazing. It's almost, it reminds me of the Sirius Dogon situation.
Yes.
Same kind of thing.
A real puzzle about how did people who shouldn't have known about that star know about it.
You know? First time caller, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
This is Dennis from Gulf Breeze, Florida. How you doing, Stan and George?
A lot of UFO cases down there. Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah, I've had numerous sightings and film night sightings, and I've seen ones that I think are full-blown ships and other ones that were possibly probes. But I discovered something one day. I was just goofing around with the map, you know, and I've been doing a little research, and I seen, you know, 1947 was Roswell, and in 67, about 20 years later, they had a lot of sightings up around Elmwood, Wisconsin. And then, you know, in 1987, there was a big flap around Gulf Breeze. So I started correlating the three together. And, you know, if you connect the three dots, you get a perfect equilateral triangle, which was kind of, you know, I thought, well, you know, can that be coincidence? I mean, that's a pretty big coincidence. And then if you bisect that triangle from Roswell out, it runs right through Point Pleasant, you know, the Mothman Chronicles and that. And
yeah,
then continues
I've been there.
On through Washington. So I started, you know, running some lines here on a map of the United States and connected some triangles and bisecting the triangles. And I was amazed that along those triangular lines and along those bisected lines, some of your most unbelievable phenomena is either right next to those lines or right on those lines. And I just think it's just too much to be a coincidence.
People, Amy Michel, a French researcher, published books in the 60s, I guess, and one of them was Flying Saucers and the Straight Line Mystery, and how you get a whole bunch of observations along a straight line covering hundreds of miles. He did it for France. One problem with that, of course, is we don't hear about all sightings. Most sightings don't get reported. Frank Ficino, in his book Shoot Them Down, talks about a line west of, starting east of Washington, D.C., and flying directly west from there, and a whole bunch of observations along the line, and that includes Flatwoods, West Virginia, and on from there. So we need a whole lot of professional activity related to UFO sightings rather than the ha-ha kind of stuff that we frequently get. You know, how many departments of unidentified flying objects do we have at major universities? There's only been a dozen or so PhD theses. There's plenty of room for more, but we got to get rid of the laughter curtain, the fear of ridicule that keeps people from getting involved in such research. So, yeah, there's plenty going on, and there are correlations, and you scratch your head about some of these and what to make of them. I should add, I've been in Gulf Breeze, incidentally, and that was a very interesting series of sightings down there.
Sure was. East of the Rockies, you're on with Stanton Friedman. Hi there.
Oh, hi. This is Mary.
Okay, Mary.
Okay, George. Hi, George. And Stan, I've listened to you, George, for quite a while. I have a pretty amazing story. My father was in the military. Am I cut off?
No, you're with us.
Okay, because sometimes when I start talking, my phone will just hang up. It cuts out. Nothing's wrong with it.
We just don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay. My father and mother, when they were young, just married, they had my sister and a bright... My father was in the military at Tinkerfield in Midwest City, Oklahoma. Bright light shone through their window, so bright it just lit everything up. And my dad was kind of he was a brilliant man, just over the charts in IQ. And he and mom and took their little baby and chased this thing for about 40 miles. And he said, he didn't tell me this now. Now he's dead. He died a year and a half ago. But I got to live with him for 3 years before he died. And my sister told them, she was a baby. And she told them one night on the phone, do you remember that thing we chased when I was a baby? Now, how would she have any memory of that? And she was murdered the next day. And my dad, though, that happened, he was on the fast track in the military because he was very intelligent, and they had done all the background checks. He had met a fifth-grade teacher, and she said, you know, those men came to talk to me. I didn't tell them anything about you because I guess he was a little bit of a hellraiser, but he was always very intelligent. And after that happened, his career just stopped, and he knew. You know, he got into the reserve, but he became very bitter, and he never would talk about that. In fact, my mother told me. And when he was dying, I asked him about it. And he said, yes. He said, we chased it. And he said, it like sucked into itself and disappeared right in front of him. Now, all our lives, UFOs seem to follow us around. There's seven of us. And we're part Indian on both sides, and my grandmother was it's passed down to the women, and my brothers have ESP real big time. And as a matter of fact, he had a priest on a couple of weeks ago giving revelation or what's going to happen.
Father Wingate, yes.
Okay, but let me tell you, the neutron bomb over Houston, a lot of us are getting that. And I always wondered why, and I thought, NASA. They don't want to destroy NASA, but they don't want the people. Okay. Anyway, I was out in California. Then I moved to California, and I saw a UFO. I was in Woodside in the bay, and it's a real, you know, very exclusive place. They don't allow street lights. They want it to stay kind of country light.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was all by myself in this big, beautiful house. I walked out onto the balcony, and I saw this UFO getting bigger and bigger coming down. And this is the honest-to-God truth, and I'm a Christian. I wouldn't lie. It landed just, you know, yards from me. Now, and I was at the time, my health was failing terribly, and I didn't have long to live. Well, after that, I was completely healed. And I didn't remember it, though, until watching, and I think it might have been something with you, but they showed kind of a spaceship, and it clicked back in my memory 2 years later. Now, you would think when one came and landed right in front of you, you would be running and telling anyone, but it was like erased from my memory.
Well, that happens. Who erases it from the memory, Stan?
Well, I don't know. The seed is planted, let's put it that way. One of the most incredible things about flying saucers seems to be, and I fully recognized this when I was at the actual location of the Betty and Barney Hill sighting up in Lincoln, New Hampshire, clearly they were directing Barney's driving. He would never have turned off the main road onto this little side road, and it was the only area where there was a big clearing big enough for the craft to land it, and I can just picture the captain saying, let's get him, that's a good spot down there. We can set down. We can grab them. Middle of the night, nobody around. We'll be protected. They seem to be capable of affecting our mental activities. And, George, let's face it, you don't think every government in the world would like to be able to do that?
Of course. They knew the extraterrestrials. They were going to abduct that couple, didn't they?
Sure. It was clearly intentional. And there's no getting around it, especially, as I say, when you're right there and you look around. The only place they could have driven them like driving sheep as a shepherd. And so, yeah, they seem to be capable of inducing us to do what they want without putting a knife to our back or a gun to our head. And, we seem to be fortunate that they haven't caused us to do all kinds of terrible things. I'm not saying they're good guys all the time. That's not what I'm saying.
No, but David Jacobs doesn't think they're good guys.
Yeah, I know. And, long-term, short-term, people can have different views of the same activity depending on which direction you're looking from. you know, doctors sometimes have to do stuff in the emergency room that shocks the person, but if he sees the machine says they're going into fibrillation, maybe you want to slam his chest. Well, the patient is, what? You know, why'd you do that? You hurt me. Well, it was to save his life. So,
got it. We had no choice. Let's go to another call. Wild card line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, George from Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir.
Being from here in the Pittsburgh area at one time where you worked, probably at the Westinghouse, there's got to be a lucky man and a woman somewhere embedded in that company that flew a flying disc over walls and haze out of Vettis. And we'll assume that that flying disc that they were is like a hockey puck with a glass bubble on and a stick with a T on. Two of them flew over there, and several people have seen it, and they were suited up. So we'll assume that it had to be a nuclear-type powering device because they were suited for protection. And the question is, if you don't know about it, maybe you should check back to Westinghouse and see what that story is, because you'd had to have a nuclear device for the necessary power to get the kind of a gyrocapacitor effect to make that machine work. Do you know anything about it?
I didn't hear about it when I worked there between 66 and 69, and I actually spoke at Westinghouse Research Labs and a lot of other professional groups in the area while I was working for Westinghouse, and so I don't know who to ask, but drop me a note, tell me more, fsphys@rogers.com, or Post Office Box 958. Houlton, Houlton, Maine, 04730-0958. I'll see what I can do.
Well, Stanton, that wraps up another night. I will see you. Of course, we'll talk to you when that new book comes out, but I'll see you in Roswell in July, okay?
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, my friend. You take care of yourself.
Thanks much, George.
Stanton Friedman, if you need any information on his website, well, all you got to do is go to the coasttocoastam.com website, and you'll see his name under tonight's guest, and merely just click that. Thank you to the many brand-new listeners who keep joining the Coast to Coast family, the ever-growing Coast to Coast family. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbeth, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.